Up next on our program, one of our favorite guests, talented author and journalist. He's written books like A Futile and Stupid Gesture, Orson Welles' last movie, The Making of the Other Side of the Wind, and was also a producer of the documentary They'll Love Me When I'm Dead. We are happy to be joined by our friend Josh Karp. Hello there, Josh.
Hey, Rich. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you dealing in these curious times we live in?
I thought I was doing really well, and I think I just kind of hit my cracking point like about a week ago. So I think that's pretty good, right?
I would say that's very good. If you made it that far without cracking, see, I just try to schedule like bi-weekly crack-ups, and then that sort of maintains balance.
Right. No, I just, because it's really healthy, I just hold everything in and then, completely lose it after a long time. So that's I'm getting there. But no, things are good.
We all deal with things in our own way.
Sick, and we're all... Nobody's killed each other in our house, so we're very happy.
I would say, given the times, that's at least an A-, a solid A.
For sure. Absolutely.
Well, you're always doing some really fascinating projects. One that we can talk about, man, oh, man, you mentioned it to me in an online discussion, and I'm over the moon thinking about what this could be. You're working with Ricky Cobb, who does the fantastic Super 70s Twitter account, on an encyclopedia of the 70s?
Yeah, I'm working on a couple projects with Ricky. It's funny. It started, not that you want the whole story, but what's funny is one of my kids' baseball teams, like one of the other dads, about a year ago maybe, started forwarding me all these Super 70s tweets. And he was, I think convinced that it was me who had the account, which was extremely flattering. And then I realized I'm like the only writer he knows. So I think he kind of like was like, well, he's interested in the 70s, and that's the deal. So anyway, Ricky and I, about like last April, it's kind of one of the best products, for me of the pandemic, is I was like, that guy's got the greatest account. It's, it's always, always hilarious. It always makes me immediately, feel connected, because it's like, it's funny, but it's a depiction of literally exactly what it was like to grow up in the 70s without saying it. They're just everything you're just like, that's what it felt like. Yep. So I emailed him and I was like, hey, we should talk. And we started talking about doing a book, and there were hours and hours of conversations that were, we'd start talking about the book, and then we'd start talking about specific episodes of What's Happening, that would, then turn into the episode of Emergency where Kareem had to be rescued from the sports car he got stuck behind the wheel of. So there's a lot of unproductive but very fun time. But yeah, so that's what we're doing. We're doing, I would say an accurate but not necessarily factual encyclopedia of the 1970s.
That sounds amazing. I can't wait, because I'm significantly older than you, Josh. So I that was my decade. I was 11 years old when the 70s began. So vivid memories of all of it. And I started thinking about the things that represent the 70s to me. And look, there was so much truly great television in the 70s. I think of that CBS Saturday Night lineup when it had All in the Family and Mary Tyler Moore and Newhart, MASH, Carol Burnett. But for some reason, the show that to me says 1970s is The Rockford Files.
Oh, absolutely. That is like the... First of all, if you were to come from another planet and land in the 70s, you would think that this country was so horribly in need of private investigators, right? Because it was like there were like every third show was a private eye, and I kind of love that about something. But Rockford was absolutely the coolest. I mean, he was, James Garner was fantastic, and they had the best ensemble cast, because you had all the tropes of a 70s show, right?
Right.
the awesome car. You had him living in a weird place. He lived in a trailer in Malibu, which would probably be worth about $8.5 million today. He's got the great crusty old dad. He's got the beleaguered cop friend, which like were cops, were sergeants, anything in the 70s, but just totally beleaguered all the time, right? They're always, you know, just like, oh, you do that, you're fired, you know. And then, of course, somebody's ever fired. And then you have Angel.
Oh, yes.
Sidekick, who is possibly my favorite character in all of television.
I love the show so much. And then you mentioned the ton of detective shows, and they didn't all last very long, but there were so many good ones. Another of my favorites, and I don't think it was on many seasons, but it was Banachek. Do you remember that?
This is, something is wrong with you and I, because I knew you were going to say Banachek, which is, I had this conversation with somebody like 3 weeks ago, because they were talking about how, because that was George Peppard, right?
And yes.
He had a limo driver.
Right.
which I don't know. I can't remember. Was the circumstance that he was independently wealthy, or did he just have a limo driver?
Oh, I don't remember. But that was, I want to say it was, maybe it took place in Boston. I might be.
It did.
Okay. All right. I feel better.
And he had all these weird Polish sayings that he would use. Do you remember that? He'd be like, you know, somebody would say something like completely, a typical thing you'd understand. He'd say, well, you know, but if the dough doesn't rise, the pierogies, as my grandmother said. And, you know, he's always just like, just so great. You know, I mean, that kind of thing would be so, I mean, it was lost on us, but at least we appreciated it. I'm sure people, if they were watching it today, would be like, what? God.
Oh, yeah.
But Banachek was a great show. I love that show.
There were all the great comedies that we mentioned, but it was also, in many ways, the decade of the spinoff. And several of the most successful series had multiple spinoffs.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Mary Tyler Moore, right? You had Rhoda, and then you had Phyllis, which was pushing it, but still... still great. But yeah, no, there were, that was, you know, you had all the great spinoffs, you had all the great, the shows with the guest cast every week, like your Love Boat Fantasy Island thing. And like, that has been possibly the most, going back over the plots of episodes of the Love Boat Fantasy Island ABC After School specials.
Oh, man.
Has been, I just sit and laugh like a lunatic with nobody around reading those. They're so good. They're so of the time. The after school specials, imagine this, somebody pitching this today. you ever seen John Mulaney's thing about, you know, trying to pitch?
Oh, yes.
Pitch Back to the Future? Okay. So, Red Button, who is in like every, on all those shows all the time. Red Button is a retired clown who is depressed because he no longer has access to children. Like, how great is that?
Wow.
Like a show about a depressed clown, right? Like, that would go real far. I mean, no matter how depressing shows are now, nobody would be like, let's do the depressed clown show. And then the whole thing, like, it's like this really sappy thing, but it, like, everything you read about it, you, like, somebody would be like, what, he can't wait to be back with small children? Are you kidding? You know?
And why? I think John Wayne Gacy destroyed the potential of a remake of that.
Exactly. And they're just so, they're so good. Yeah. And the Love Boat episodes and the Fantasy Island, you know, it's funny the way they viewed, I think like human desire and what people wanted out of life was just so fascinating. And if I were a woman and I were reading what the women on Fantasy Island were going to Fantasy Island for, I would be, absolutely horrified.
You also,
you know, nothing they do is independent of men, for sure.
You also had really the last gasp of variety shows. Carol Burnett made it through most of the decade, but you saw the end of like the Red Skelton show, Ed Sullivan right. show went off the air in the early 1970s. And then you had some, well, you had some epic failures like Howard Cosell's Saturday Night Live. And then I think late 70s, Friend of Downtown, Jeff Altman, Pink Lady and Jeff.
Which is, and I know you and I have kind of discussed this a little offline before, that is, and that's going to have to go in the book.
That is
maybe as surreal and 70s as it gets, because, right, you've got, I don't even know if Pink Lady spoke English.
Oh, no, I don't think they did. But I can go one better on the bizarre and surreal, and that was right up there. Do you remember the brief variety show from Shields and Yarnell?
Oh, yeah. Mimes.
Mimes on right? TV. What could go wrong?
the presence of celebrity mimes in the 70s tells you exactly what an innocent culture it was, even though it didn't seem to be. Right? Because, like, who would, you know, it's like just as close to having a mime with a talk show.
I have been told it speaks volumes about me as a child that I really looked forward to the Shields and Yarnell show. I remember my brother giving me a really hard time about that as a kid.
But now you come off as sophisticated.
we're talking with Josh Karp on Downtown. Well, let's break away from the entertainment world. 70s also a terrific decade in sports, and I'm a big baseball guy. Obviously, the 75 World Series, despite the way it ended for us Red Sox fans, right. One of the best of all time. But I always liked that era. You had those new artificial turf stadiums, which meant that the game changed in the 70s, and it was all about speed and defense. And in that whole decade, only one guy, George Foster, in 1977, managed to hit 50 home runs in a season.
I always wonder what George Foster would have done in the 90s.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because that was when, like, a guy hitting, like, 23 home runs was like a big power year, you know? I mean, that was not, him hitting 50... Was like amazing. You know, I mean, he was like, what? I mean, probably the next person hit like 32.
Oh, yeah.
You know, something like that, if that. Like, people didn't even hit 30 home runs, you know, routinely in those days. That was an incredible feat. Yeah, that, and the speed of the game and the personalities, I think.
Oh, you had the Oakland A's teams that were so great with all that was going on with Reggie and Catfish and Charlie Finley and that crew. You had Dick Allen as an MVP with the White Sox. And then, best of all, Doc Ellis throwing a no-hitter on LSD.
That was really, I mean, you know, but first of all, Dick Allen, I mean, I'm a White Sox fan, and I was, I think, 6 when he joined the Sox. And he was like my first absolute sports hero.
I love those early 70s White Sox teams with Dick Allen. Bill Melton was one of my favorite players as a kid.
Oh, do you remember Wilbur Wood?
Oh, loved Wilbur Wood. Yeah, because he would pitch every other day, and every season he'd win 24 and lose 22.
Sometimes 26 would be in the loss.
Yes.
Actually, it wasn't always more wins than losses. But yeah, oh my God, those were great teams, and baseball was so much fun, and all the, you know, all the sports. I mean, Ricky and I, when we're talking about this project, one of the people who always comes up is Ken Stabler.
Oh, love me some Snake back in the day. Yes.
Oh, and can you even begin to imagine? Like, first of all, it was, you know, celebrated that he was out all night before games.
Right.
right? And that he was, like, smoking, and that he was, like, you know, drinking every day. And he was the most fun, you know, and it certainly didn't, you know, as far as we could tell, it's like, today, can you imagine the tragedy he would be viewed as? You know, people, they'd be like, well, the Raiders would put him in rehab again.
Right, right.
You know, because, and, you know, and he was terrible, you know. Can't have somebody act, you know, and it was so much fun, those Raiders teams with John Matuzak.
Oh, Fred Biletnikoff.
You know, oh, man. I mean, that was, talk about personality. That's what I think.
And even before Stabler, you had the Mad Bomber, Daryl LaMonica.
Right. And George Blanda.
Oh, God, yeah. At 103 years old, still out there kicking. You've never noticed that his mid-40s looked very different than Tom Brady's mid-40s.
Well, that is the great thing. Is, you know, I mean, you look and you go, like, look. I was looking at Brady the other day, and I was like, you know, God bless him. Like, that dude, that guy really looks good. Like, you know, my grandfathers were both completely gray by the time they were 35. And, you know, Sparky Anderson, when he was managing the, you know, those great Reds teams, he was like 40.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like 100. You know? And so, yeah, I mean, people aged very differently in those days.
Well, it was the smoking and the artificial turf. I think that they both age you.
Yes. Well, I'm sure the artificial turf aged a lot of people's knees. That was, I can't even imagine what it must have been like to go down, you know, like being a football player and getting slammed.
Oh, man.
You know, a tenth of an inch of, and it was covering some that.
It was, speaking of sports, too, it was a golden age of sportscasters, too. Back in those days, you had the sort of tail end of Kurt Gowdy's amazing career. You had the rise, yeah, of people like Costas as a young man. But I don't know that anybody in that decade was bigger in sports than Howard Cosell.
No, he's, and it's amazing. I mean, you know, to think that somebody, I'm trying to think of a modern equivalent of somebody who, you know, is by all accounts, who's a great sportscaster yet is like unappealing on every level. Right?
Yeah.
You know, he was like, he wasn't charming. He had the crazy voice. You know, he had the terrible toupee. But he was great. And that, I think, you know, something that's really been, one of the great thing, I think, with the 70s was, it was like the last time we had a collective culture that we were all embedded in.
Right, right.
You know, it was before there was any cable. So, like, we were all watching The Love Boat. Right?
Absolutely.
And we were all watching Cosell. And we were all, you know, Monday Night Football was not, like, cool to have games on Monday and Thursday and, you know, sometimes Saturday and always on Sunday. You know, it was like, that was like, whoa, Monday Night Football. And, you know, and you had, and good God, you had Don Meredith with him, too.
That's right. Was,
you know, so fantastic. You know, I mean, can you imagine having somebody like that, you know, singing at the end of every
game? Turn out the lights, the party's over.
Couple drinks in them.
Exactly. Yeah. Josh Karp, man, we're running out of time, which I knew would happen because when you and I get going, we can just go forever. Can we table this for now and come back and do part two, because there's so much more I want to talk about from the 70s.
Anytime. I'm always happy to do it.
And I can't wait to hear more about this project. Josh, we appreciate it. We'll be in touch after Thanksgiving when we swing into November, and we'll do more of this. But in the meantime, as always, thanks for being with us. Hope you and your family have a great Thanksgiving. Stay safe and don't crack between now and the next time.
I will not. I'll make it through the holidays. Thank you for having me, and I look forward to doing it again.
All right. Appreciate it. Josh Karp with us on Downtown.